We are holding on Ayin Zayin Amud Beis by the first two dots, about 10 lines from the top. Mishnah said, Shilya Shayasa, that if you have an amniotic sac came out of a pregnant animal, then we said once it starts coming out, then you're not allowed to eat it. When it's still inside the mother animal, when you shecht it, then you're allowed to eat it if you're not nauseated by it. Okay, so I've seen various places where it is translated as a placenta. Since we're talking about over here whether the baby is inside it or not, then the pastures can't be the placenta because the baby's not inside the placenta. It's attached to it.
Right.
So the pastures, it means the amniotic sac. Anyway, the point is we said in the Mishnah that if it is inside the mother, then you are allowed to eat it as long as it's not something that you find nauseating. But if it's not, if it starts coming out, then already it's also because then maybe the head end came out, and once the head of a baby comes out, then it's considered already born. So, Omer Abulah, the Loshanu Ela She'enim of Vlad. That applies, this din of the Mishnah applies only if there's no baby. There's no baby together with that amniotic sac. Avo Yeshim of Vlad, but if there is a Vlad along with it, and you see, normally, of course, the baby will come out. Normally, it'll tear through the amniotic sac and come out, and then the sac will follow it. Here, what happened is, fine, you have the sac, let's say, is coming out first, and the baby is still inside. Then, no problem, ain choshin mavlad acha. We don't have to be concerned that maybe there was another baby in there that was, maybe, in other words, the sac came out first. Maybe we should consider maybe there was a baby inside it, which dissolved. And now there's another baby inside, and we should say which let's say we haven't seen its sac, maybe its sac dissolved or whatever. But the point is, we don't have to worry about that. We say because this sac is from the baby that you still find in the womb, and I usually the baby rips it open and comes out, and then it follows it. Okay, so in this case, it came out the other way around. Still doesn't mean that we still don't have to worry that there was another baby inside the sac. Therefore, the same gene would apply that you are allowed to eat it. That you are allowed to eat it because there's no actual baby been born yet.
Why don't we just say that we check whether or not it's like we do today? We check that it's intact, and if it's not intact, then we do have to suspect. If it is, we don't.
That's a good question. I don't know, but I guess usually when it comes out, maybe it's not usually intact. So therefore,
should be.
Okay, I don't know.
Intact.
Okay, I don't know.
Complete.
But usually when the baby's inside it and then it comes out without it, so usually it's not complete when it's. Okay, I don't know. It's a good question. All right. That's Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Bein Yesh Im Avlad, Rabbi Yochanan Omer, Bein Ein Im Avlad, Bein Yesh Im Avlad, Choshin Lavlad Acher. Note, whether you have a baby that's in the womb over there, whether you don't find any baby, which in that case it means the baby dissolved, either way, the fact that the sac came out first makes us have to be concerned that maybe there was another baby in there, which dissolved. And therefore, you have the same problem. You can't eat the sac. Because the baby that was inside it may have dissolved. There may have been a baby inside it that dissolved. It's not necessarily from the same baby that's still in the womb. Therefore, the head end may have come out first, and therefore you can't eat it because we said then it's not covered.
What's the correlation between the presence of two?
Because like this, we have to be concerned that there was another baby inside the sac, which is now dissolved, and what end of it came out first? The end that would have contained the head of the baby. Once that comes out, it's considered born. Then that sac is also to eat, it's not mutter with the mother's shchita anymore. Then it would be a separate thing. We've been saying the whole parent that the baby inside the womb is mutter with the mother's shchita, but once it's born, then not. And here you'd say already it's considered born. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that we have to be concerned there was a baby inside that sac which dissolved. And therefore, so even if you find another baby in the womb, then it doesn't mean you can eat the sac. You can't assume that the sac came from the baby that you find in the womb. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying.
Because
it could be from another one. The question is, Aini, is that so? That's how the machlokes goes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar? V'ha'omer Rabbi Yirmiyah l'chumra omer Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yirmiyah tells us, you should know, Rabbi Elazar, when Rabbi Elazar's opinion on this subject is actually to be machmir, not to be makel. It comes out the way we just said it. Rabbi Elazar is the one who's makel. He says if there's a baby intact in the womb, then you're allowed to eat the sac even if it started coming out. And Rabbi Yochanan is the one saying not. So Rabbi Yochanan is the one who's machmir. If it was said, then it was said as follows. We have to restate the machlokes. We have to reformulate, restate the machlokes. Amar Rav Elazar, Lo Shanu Ela She'en Kshur B'Vlad, that Rav Elazar is saying that the Machloikas, not the Machloikas, that when our Mishnah says that if it started coming out, Rav Elazar is saying that you can't eat anymore, Lo Shanu Ela She'en Kshur B'Vlad, that would only apply if this sack is not attached to the baby. So if it's not attached to the baby, av kshura b'vlad ein choshen l'vlad acher. But if it is attached to the so when it's not attached to the baby, then there's a real possibility that you actually are talking about over here. You had two babies with each one in its own sack, and one of them the sack is missing, and the other one the baby is missing, and therefore you can't eat this one for the same reason. Av kshura b'vlad, but he's av kshura b'vlad. But if the sack is tied to the baby, is attached to the baby, obviously then it is its own amniotic sack. Therefore, muta b'achila. Therefore, Rav Elazar would say that then we don't have to be concerned that there was another vlad, because the fact that this sack is attached to this baby shows that it belongs to this baby. So if it came out first and then the baby is still in the womb, then fine, you can eat the sack. Because there's obviously no baby that was inside it that was born. But Rabbi Yochanan Omar, whereas Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with that and says, no, Anu ein lanu ela shilya b'loy vlad. No, all we know is when do we say that it's also to eat? When do we say it's also to eat? When you have a shilya that part of it came out and there's no vlad associated with it at all, not attached, not attached. Avol yesh im vlad. Rabbi Yochanan would say, if there is a baby in the womb, bein kshura b'vlad, bein ein kshura b'vlad, now we would say whether the amniotic sac is attached to that bit, tied to that baby or not, ein choshin l'vlad acher. Then Rabbi Yochanan says, we don't have to worry about another baby. There was obviously only the one. It so happened here the sac came out first, even though normally the baby comes out first, okay. And therefore you would be allowed to eat it. We don't have to worry about that there was a birth. That just
so initially we said,
First we thought that Rabbi Elazar was saying that if there's a vlad in the womb, then we don't have to worry about a vlad acher, but that comes out that he's being makel. Now we're saying the other way around. Rabbi Elazar would say that even if there's a baby in the womb, when the shulia comes out, if the shulia and the baby are not attached, no good. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say it doesn't matter whether they're attached or not, either way the shulia you're allowed to eat. Only if there's no baby at all, then you have to be concerned, given that ain't shulya, b'loy vlad, given that a shulya means that there was a baby there at some point, it means that it dissolved, and therefore it may mean that the head end came out first, etc.
Let's say it was from a different vlad, but anything that comes in the mother is kosher.
But once it started coming out, now that started being born, think of it. Forget about the sack for a second. An actual baby that starts getting born, once its head comes out, then it's considered born already, la locha, even though the rest of its body is still inside. At that point, if you want to eat that baby, you have to shecht it. It needs its own shechita. It's not covered by the mother's shechita. The shulya might be from a different baby that dissolved, and you can't shecht it because there's no simonim to shecht. But nevertheless, it started being born, and therefore...
And it wouldn't be touched by the mother...
No, because it started coming out already. If it was still inside the womb, yeah, you could eat it.
No, but when it comes out, you're allowed to eat that shechita.
No. Only if you find it in the womb. Only if you find the baby. Only if you find it alive in the womb, then you're right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Behind.
So repeat.
The revision of the machlokas goes like this. That Rabbi Elazar is saying that if there's no baby in the womb at all, everybody would agree the shulya is also once it starts coming out. That's what the Mishnah is telling us. Because then the head end, what came out first might have been the head end. If you have a baby in the womb, Rabbi Yochanan will say, fine, you can eat the shulya, no problem, because obviously the shulya belongs to that baby. Rabbi Elazar will say, no, only if the shulya is tied to the baby by a cord or something. So that's the point.
Basically, you consider the shulya being like the anatomy of what it means by...
Well, tied, in other words, like you have a cord, you have a ligament, whatever it is exactly that attaches the baby to the amniotic sac.
I'm sure that varies from species to
species. No. Mammals, pregnancies and births are...
They all have an umbilical cord?
Well, yeah, I mean, the umbilical cord goes to the placenta, that's something else. Here we're talking about to the amniotic sac, which is it's a sac that's filled with water that the baby develops inside.
This is universal?
Among mammals, I don't know, universal, but at least between people and between kosher animals, yeah, it's
you consider the Gemara consider the sheer part of the baby or both together.
Yeah, in effect, it's
called, really they're separate.
Okay, that may be, but the point is, when it's inside the mother, it would be mutter the same as anything else inside the mother is mutter, and the same thing as a baby is mutter. Kol b'behemah tochelah. We said on Amud Aleph that from there we learn the basic concept that a shoya is mutter in the first place. Only once it starts being born, then we said that you have the problem that the head end came out first. So now again, there is a baby there in the womb as well. So you have a shoya started coming out. Meanwhile, you shech the mother and you find there's a baby in the womb. Then Rabbi Yochanan will say you can always eat the shoya even though it started coming out. And Rabbi Lazar is going to say that only if it's tied to it. Because otherwise it's possible. Because otherwise it may have come from another baby. And once it came from another baby, that baby started being born already and is not covered by the mother's shritah.
So from a Hashkafic perspective, you could say that they differ on how concrete you are tied to the baby. Rabbi Lazar would say I accept a higher standard of...
Well, okay, if you want to say it that way, fine. The point is, Rabbi Lazar is saying we need to be absolutely certain that the shuya belongs to this baby, whereas Rabbi Yochanan is following the roiv, chazaka, is that you have, generally speaking, amniotic sacs don't get dissolved. Generally speaking, babies don't get dissolved. So if you have a baby and you have an amniotic sac, okay, it's an unusual situation because usually the sac comes out after, but still it's not so unusual that you can't consider that they belong
together.
It happens, but whatever.
Fine. It's not the same thing.
Okay,
whatever.
The point is that's not the point. The point is that the reason why...
It shouldn't apply the same
rule. Again, the reason why you're allowed to eat the sac is based on the same rule as you're allowed to eat the baby, because kol b'behemah techeilu. The same rule that we've been saying throughout the parish. The only problem is if you have an empty sack over there, then there's a problem that the end that came out first might be the head end. So again, if there's a baby there or as well in the womb, then Rabbi Lazar is going to say, oh, if the sack is tied to it, then you're good because you know the sack belongs to that baby. Therefore, obviously, no head came out first because the baby's head is still inside the womb. Therefore, you're good. Rabbi Yochanan will say, it doesn't even matter if they're tied together or not. Either way, you know that there was no head that came out at this point, because all you have at this point that came out was an empty sack. That's the point. And then, behind the Omer Rabbi Yirmiyah, L'chumra Omer Rabbi Lazar. So now that explains what Rabbi Yirmiyah said, that Rabbi Lazar is talking L'chumra. Because Rabbi Lazar's opinion is more machmu, he would say that in order for it to be considered that it belongs to this baby, it has to be tied to it. Okay. Tanya Kava said Rabbi Lazar, we have a braisa that goes according to Rabbi Lazar. Like this. Here we're going to talk about a human mother. Hamapelas min behema chaya v'oif. If a human mother miscarries a creature that looks like a domestic or wild animal or a bird, so a malformed baby, v'shulya imahan, and along with that baby, along with that miscarriage, comes a shulya. So it depends. V'zman shekshura behen. If the shulya is tied to this deformed baby that was born, then we don't have to be concerned that the mother actually gave birth to that there was another baby over there. Again, you would think maybe you have the possibility, maybe there was another baby, a regularly formed male or female baby, which then dissolved and you have the contents of it inside the sac. That fluid that fills up the sack. And then if you were to say that, now we learned earlier in the parak, and we're gonna mention over here also, you have Reb Meir holds that if a woman miscarries a creature that looks like an animal or a bird, then it's still considered, you still look at, well, is it male or is it a female? Does it have male organs or does it have female organs? And based on that, you determine how many days of tumah and tahara she has. The Chachamim disagree with that and say that if it looks like an animal, then there's b'chlal no yimei tumor or yimei tahara. It's not considered a birth. If there's blood that comes out, then she'll be a nidah. And if there's no blood that comes with it, as could happen, then there's no tumor and tahara at all.
Even if the creature lives?
No, because if it's deformed like that, it's not going to live. Yeah.
So, like tumor and tahara won't apply to plants?
No, no, one has nothing to do with the other. The Torah tells us that if a human mother gives birth, then she's tomei for X number of days, and then she has dam toha after that for X number of days after that. The exact number depends whether it's a male or a female. Rav Meir holds the same rule would apply whether we're talking a normal baby or whether we're talking about a deformed creature like this that looks like an animal. As long as it has male or female parts, respectively, then you have the same dinim. The Chachamim argue with him on grounds that we'll learn in Masechta Nidah, in a few months, Bez Hashem, we'll learn Tishrei time, we'll start learning Nidah, Bez Hashem. So the point is like this. So getting back to the Braisa, if you have, you have a miscarriage like this of a deformed baby, and you have a shulya with it. So the Braisa says this man should have had. So like this, if the shulia is tied to this to this deformed baby, to this min behema chayavoy, ein choshesh in the vlad acher. We don't have to be concerned that maybe she was actually pregnant with twins, one a normal baby which ended up getting dissolved, and the other one this deformed creature. If we were to say that, then we would say we would have to consider that she has yemei tuma and yemei tahara. For a boy or for a girl, as the case may be. And since we don't know, because it was dissolved, we would have to give her the chumras to both, as we learned earlier in the parak. We had a situation over there where she's tomei for 14 days, and then she has dam toya for 26 days. Whereas if it had been a definite boy, then she'd have 7 days of tumah and 33 of tahara. A girl, she'd have 14 and 66. So like this, but we don't say that.
Yeah, the shilya and the
blood. Over here, there's a shilya and a blood, but the point is, the blood does not, there's no dinei tumah v'tahara regarding this blood because it's deformed, it looks like an animal. The shilya, because it's tied to it, we don't have to worry that represents another baby. To this deformed creature, yeah. Therefore, you don't have to worry about that there was another baby in there that got dissolved. Therefore, it's strictly a question of, is she nidder or not? If
why,
blood...
Why we're not
because we're not. Because since it's tied there, it obviously comes from that creature. It obviously comes from that deformed baby. That's the point. Bizman shekshura behen ein chosh in the blood acher. That is the point the Braisa is telling us, which is also the point Rabbi Lazar is telling us. That's why the Gemara is saying this. Braisa is telling us what Rabbi Lazar is telling us. If the shulia is tied to the blood, then it obviously belongs to the blood. And if the blood
belongs to the blood, there's no excuse to say that they may be another one. to
because then there would be because then there would be a separate shulia.
Yeah.
Like this, when you have, she miscarries a behema chayav oif, and along with it, tied to it is a shulya. The shulya is obviously what this creature developed in. Therefore, you don't have to worry. Therefore, according to the mayor, fine.
Even if there's another one in the womb?
No, we're talking about there's only the one baby. There's only the one baby came out with a shulya tied to it. You don't have to be concerned that shulya contains the dissolved remains of another baby that was developing in the womb. That's the point. Obviously, if there's another baby in the womb, then... Okay, no, that's the point. If there's another live baby in the womb that's born, then obviously you'd see whether it's a male or a female, and you go accordingly. Here we're talking about the only thing that came out during this miscarriage was this deformed baby, as well as a shulia tied to it. So we're saying we don't have to worry that the shulia represents another baby. It belongs to this creature. And according to the Chachamim, therefore, there's no tumas leida at all. Either she's a nidda or she's not, as the case may be.
Yeah.
But continue. One.
Sorry. Yeah. In general, if there's twins, do they have separate shulias?
Yes.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Actually, many times they do, most of the time they do, but sometimes you can have twins in one shulia. Okay. Anyway, but continues the Braisa, if the shulia is not attached to the deformed baby, then hareni matolah chomer shnei vlodis. Then we have to give her the chumra of two possible babies. Because, conceivably, shani omer shemini moyach shvir shel shulia. First of all, the shvir, which means the developing baby inside the one amniotic sac, may have dissolved, and it may have been a boy or a girl, as the case may be.
Nimuach
means dissolved. Melted, dissolved. And also, shemini melech shel yotzeh shel shvir. And then on the other hand, the other baby, which came out intact but deformed, might have had its own shulya, which also dissolved. So therefore, you're going to have to treat this mother with the chumra of as if there are two potential babies over here. Which means, in other words, so first of all, Rashi explains, what it means is like this. Even if no blood came out in the birth, then she still has the din of a yoledes. She still has the din that she gave birth. Now, mitzad, from the point of view of the deformed baby, of the one that looks like an animal, there's no yemei tumah v'tahara on it because it's a creature that looks like an animal. However, the problem is the shulya itself. The shulia that came out may have contained in it a dissolved baby, again, because it's not attached to the deformed baby. So we don't know, it may represent a different baby that was growing, again, because, usually twins each have their own shulia. Therefore, we don't know whether that was a male or a female. So therefore, what it winds up is, We have to do the chumrah of it may have been a male before it dissolved. It may have been a female. Therefore, we have the same rule like we had earlier in the parak, in which we'll discuss in Nidda various cases of this, where she has the yemei tumah like a girl and yemei tahara like a boy.
Which is scientifically.
I don't know about scientifically. What we're saying over here,
there may be two shilias for a blood, one shilia for two vladim,
Okay, you don't usually have two shilyas for one block.
It's not usual.
Okay. Nonetheless, this is what we're saying over here, and we see, therefore, that this braisa agrees with Rebbe Lazar, that if the shilya is not tied to the vlad, then there's the real possibility that it belongs to another vlad. Tosfos, actually, by the way, brings up another point over here, which is, there's two possible ways of learning this braisa. Again, one way we could say is that choymer shnei vlades means implies that the braisa is like Reb Meir. Reb Meir, who says that even for the deformed baby that looks like an animal, you have Yemei Tumah and Yemei Tahara. So he would say, okay, so you have that creature. Then you have the other baby, what was in the other amniotic sac, or what we have to assume was in the other amniotic sac, whatever, which dissolved, which may have been a boy or a girl. And therefore, she winds up having to do Yemei Tumah as if it was a girl and Yemei Tahara as if it was a boy. Tosfos actually says that that conceivably, if you go according to the Rabbanon, you even have a third possibility. You might have to say that she has to do the chumras of as if she had a boy or a girl, or as if she had nothing at all, because conceivably, not necessarily. After all, maybe the shilya does belong to the deformed baby. Therefore, there's no Yemei Tumah V'Tahara for the deformed baby. If the shilya actually does belong to it, then there's no Yemei Tumah V'Tahara for it either, because there's no dissolved baby over there. Therefore, conceivably, she might be a nidah as well, which that makes even more possibilities. That means she has Yemei Tumah as if she had a girl. She has possible Yemei Tahara as if she had a boy. But if she has bleeding towards the end of that period, we'll learn about the details about it in nidah, that's Hashem. But if she has bleeding towards the end of that period, then already it's a suffix whether she's a nidah or whether it's still dam toha, or whether she's doing the period where bleeding, where she's still toha even if she bleeds. So it gets even more complicated. So those kinds of dinim, how exactly those kinds of things shake out, we'll learn in Masechta Nidah, Be'ez Hashem. But the point is, we see from this braisa that the braisa is making the distinction whether the shulya is attached to the blood or not, which is exactly the distinction Rebbe Lazar was making in our Gemara over here. Okay, so that's that. How it works as far as modern medicine, right now we're not concerned about that. We can discuss that later. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said if you have an animal that is giving birth to its firstborn, where if the firstborn is a male, then it's going to be a bechor. But like this, if she miscarries a shilya, then we said the shilya does not have any kedusha. You can throw it to the dogs to eat. My timer, now why is that? Shouldn't you say it's a 50-50 chance that it was a male or a female? Okay. Where were we? Yeah. My timer. So why is that? Why don't we say it's a 50-50 chance, and therefore we should have to be machmer to suffer daraisa? Amar of ikka breder of ami roiv behemus yold like this. Roiv behemus yold as dover akodesh b'bchor. Now it is true that most animals give birth to something that has kedushas b'chora if it's a male. Now, on the other hand, you have a minority of animals that give birth to something which, even though it's a male, does not have kedushas b'chora. Namely, that would be, umaymihu, what would that be? Nidmeh. That would be a nidmeh. It's funny, Rashi uses the expression, Rashi translates nidmeh with the French word counterfeiter, like the English word counterfeit. It means, in other words, fake. Like, it means, in other words, you can have sometimes where you have examples, let's say, for example, of sheep gives birth to a baby that looks like a goat. So it's born from a male, and it's born from a male and female sheep, but for whatever reason, it has some kind of mutation or whatever, and therefore it looks like a goat. Or a goat gave birth to something that looks like a sheep or whatever. The point is, even though it's a male, it does not have kedushas b'chora. The Gemara in b'choras learns it from a pasuk. The Gemara learns it from a pasuk because it says ach b'chor shur implies that it has to be that it itself is a shur, and the b'chor also has to be a shur, something that looks like a shur. And the same thing with the other species.
Could be a mixed breed also sometimes.
No, but that may be. But in this case, we're talking about the pastures. It's not a mixed breed. It's just sometimes it happens. The same way as we just said that a woman can miscarry a creature that looks like an animal. So also you can have that an animal of one species could give birth to something that resembles another species somehow. Okay, whatever it is, the point is, such a thing, even though it's a male, doesn't have kedushas b'chora. Now, on the other hand, v'chol ha-yoldus, mechtes chorim, mechtes nekevus. Now, animals or animal mothers, or human mothers for that matter, who give birth, generally speaking, it's 50-50, half males, half females. Okay, strictly speaking, you have a little bit more males, but at least among humans, but whatever, yeah. Therefore, smoich mi'uta denidma lamechta denakevet. So now, if you add together, you have a 50-50 chance that what this animal miscarried was actually a female, in which case there's no kedushas b'chora anyway. Out of the 50% chance that it was a male, you have that 0.5% chance or whatever that it was a nidma. And therefore, by combining them together, so the ones that are males and have kedushas b'chora come out to be a minority. They come out to be only 49.5%. Therefore, we can say that we can be makel on the shulya, and we can throw it to the dog. It doesn't have there's no isur hanar.
Because
when we consider statistically, you have the majority of cases, the majority of miscarriages are not going to be kedushas b'chora, because already 50% are out because they're females. Plus, you have whatever fraction of a percent are nidmeh.
Nidmeh means,
we just said knew that it looks like a different species.
What do you call nidmeh then?
Because nidmeh means that it looks like. Nidmeh means that it looks like. That's the thing. Rashi translated it with the word counterfeit. Like it belongs to one species, but it looks like a different one. Over Mukdashin Tikover, on the other hand, the Mishnah had said that if the same thing happens with an animal with an animal of Kodshim, an animal that was designated, let's say, as a Shlomim, that it miscarried a Shilya, then we said Tikover, it has to be buried, meaning it's also Bana. My timer, now why is that? Because Ruba, Bar Mikdash, because most such animals give birth to something that has Kedusha, because whether it gives birth to a male or a female, the only case where it wouldn't have Kedusha is if it was a Nidmeh. And a Nidmeh is only a small fraction, so therefore the roiv of babies born or miscarried by an animal of Shlomim are going to have Kedusha.
This animal gave birth was set aside for a carbon.
For Shlomim, I'll say, yeah. It happened to be that it was pregnant, right. You have different cases. You have it became pregnant before you were makdash it, after you were makdash it. Either way, the point is that well, it depends, actually. The truth is, in the Sechta Tmura, actually, we'll talk about the details when the baby is Kodesh, when it's not,
yeah,
exactly. We'll get to that.
Okay, right.
Tosfos actually points out there's a different Gemara, actually, speaking of Tmura, there's a Gemara over there that implies that a Nidmeh also has Kedusha B'chorah, not Kedusha B'chorah, that has Kedusha when it's born to a mother that's a Shlomim or whatever. Okay, so when our Gemara says most of them have Kedusha, so okay, our Gemara may be arguing with that Gemara. Sometimes you have different Gemaras that argue with each other. Ours would take the view that 0.5% or whatever that are Nidmeh wouldn't have Kedusha, and the other Gemara over there would be implying that they do, and therefore you could say 100%.
But they do have Kedusha, though. It's still the same percentage?
Whatever it is, the point is, yeah, the percentage doesn't change. The point is, according to that Gemara over there, 100% of what a Shlomim animal bears or miscarries or whatever has Kedusha. According to our Gemara, 99.5%. Whatever, the point is, it still has, the point is, there's still statistically a majority, and therefore it's also the Bano.
As a pattern, if there's one, does that reflect different time periods in the Gemara?
Okay. You do have. There were several generations of Amoraim, of course, not anywhere near 1,000 years. So it could be. It could be that came from different yeshivas. Could be Soto versus Pumbedisa or whatever. I didn't say 1,000. Okay, he said that. I'm saying no, but you do have different generations of Amoraim. You did have different yeshivas of Amoraim. Yes, the fact that you have different Gemaras that argue with each other might be because of that, because you have different yeshivas where they had with the period of compilation itself, you have it. It was mainly done by Ravina and Ravashi during their generation. Okay, whatever. I don't know how long their generation was. Ravashi was a Rosh Hashiva for 60 years. Whatever. The point remains. The fact is, you do have Gemaras that argue with each other. Why that is, we can talk about historically it's due to could be that it's due because you had different Chachamim who had different opinions and different Bavli Mezrim. Whatever. Fine.
Right. Nothing
right.
to do with compilation.
Okay.
Okay. It's more empirical.
Hold. The empirical thing is not changing. What we're saying here, our Gemara is implying that if a Shlomim animal gives birth to an animal that is a Nidmeh, it doesn't have Kedusha. The Gemara in Tmura implies that it does have Kedusha. So it's not a question of empirical or not. They both agree that statistically you have a certain percentage that are Nidmeh. The question is halacha. Does that Nidmeh have Kedusha or does it not? One Gemara over here says that it doesn't. It's not a matter of empirics. It's a matter
of... I thought the question of whether it's based on a probability.
No. What we said before is based on probability. But what we said, that was as far as a Bechor. Now we're talking about as far as Mokdoshin. Either way, the overwhelming probability is it has Kedusha.
Okay, fine.
Okay, then we said in the mission of Ein Kovrinoi, so we said, by the way, this amniotic sac you shouldn't bury it, it said, by a crossroads, or you can't bury it on a crossroads or hang it on a tree, because that would be Darkei HaEmori. Because that would be a superstitious practice, like the Emorim, the Canaanite nations in Eretz Yisrael did, and the Torah warns us not to follow in their ways. Disgusting. The point is that it's my Darkei HaEmori, it's superstitious. So Abaya and Rava da Amitavayu. Now Abaya and Rava both say, "Kol davar sheyesh bo refuah ein bo mishum Darkei HaEmori." Any practice that involves refuah, that there is something of refuah in it, ein bo mishum Darkei HaEmori. Then there's no issue of Darkei HaEmori in it. One second, we'll explain in a second what it means to yesh bo refuah. Ein bo refuah yesh bo mishum Darkei HaEmori. If there's no refuah in it, then there is a problem of Darkei HaEmori. Now what does it mean? Rashi over here explains that yesh bo mishum refuah would be, for example, when you give a person or an animal or whatever a potion or medicine, or you whisper some incantation over a place of a wound or whatever. That's yesh bo mishum refuah, because it's being done for the sake of refuah. As opposed to, for example, this case over here involving the shilya, where you're burying it at the crossroads or whatever, which is there, it has nothing to do with refuah. You're doing it so that as a superstitious thing, so that the animal won't get so the animal won't miscarry again. But it's not a direct thing. It's not a direct thing of refuah. So over here, that's what Rashi implies. There's a Gemara in Shabbos also that mentions this topic. That you have actually a whole sugya. This topic of Darkei HaEmori comes up at the end of the sixth parak of Shabbos, and there also you have the same statement of Abaya and Rava. It's referenced on the side of here in the third of Shabbos as usual. Shabbos Samach Zayin Amar Aleph. So there you have the same expression that Abaya and Rava say that if there's yesh bo mishum refuah. So there Rashi explains a little differently where the refuah aspect of it is obvious. For example, drinking a potion of something or putting a dressing on a wound or whatever, as opposed to, Rashi says, now Rashi says different over there than he does over here. Rashi says one, yeah, that's the thing. Rashi continues that when would it be? Ein boy mishum to go in lachash, for example, an incantation. She'ein nika, shehu merape, she'ei merape. It's not obvious that it would heal. In that case, the Gemara is asking, what do you mean? Does that mean yesh boy mishum da'afeh ha'amari? So anyway, the point is, that's Rashi's opinion. You have the Rashba actually has a couple of problems with Rashi's explanation. Among others, the problem is, does that mean that only we're talking about that something that's done directly over the affected area is considered not Darkei HaEmori and otherwise not? Sometimes you have things which are known to be effective, even though they're not done directly over the affected area or whatever. So the Rashba has a different explanation that kol sheyesh bo mishum refuah would mean something that is known to work for refuah, whether we understand how it works or not, as long as it's being done for the sake of refuah. Ein bo refuah would be where you're not doing it for a purpose of refuah at all, where basically like there's no constructive purpose in it at all. Then it's just some superstition.
I reassure you that today we don't intend
to okay.
heal. And we don't heal.
We are aware of that. We are aware of that. Okay. We didn't say otherwise. Nevertheless, though, the Rashba is saying that when you have something, whether we understand how it works, whether we don't understand how it works, as long as it is known to work, then there's no problem of Darkei HaEmori. So you have different opinions in Shulchan Aruch as a result of that. If you have something which is it doesn't seem to have there's no physical basis for it, but it is known to work. Can you do it or not? According to what Rashi is saying, it seems like not. And also the Rambam has a similar statement about it, that if it's something that the way the Rambam phrases it, which also the Rashi discusses in this Truva, is that it seems from the way that Rambam says it, if current medical science doesn't understand how it works, then you can't do it. And the Rashba says, what about whatever it is, whatever kind of treatment? And the Rashba says, let me give you an example. He says, in the Rashba's time, magnetic compasses were new. Nobody in that time understood how they worked. You can tell me it's Darkei HaEmori because nobody understands how they work. So therefore, that also leads the Rashba to say it's not a question of whether you understand, whether modern science, whatever modern is, understands how it works. It's rather, do we know that it is effective or not? Okay. So the question is, Bahatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, here's an example of something that doesn't seem to have, it's not done directly on the affected area, or it's not something that seems to have any effect, any particular effectiveness. The Braisa says, Ilam Shemashir Peroisa, if you have a tree that is losing its fruit before it's ripe. So you have, so it means basically the tree is like it's sort of like the tree is too healthy. So therefore, like the fruit is given, normally fruit becomes ripe, and then what happens is the connection between the fruit and between the stem of the fruit and the branch weakens, and then the fruit falls down. So what you have is basically that part of the process is happening too fast, too early in the fruit's growth cycle. So therefore, the fruit is falling off before it's ripe. So what do? Sikra b'sikra, you are allowed to paint the tree with red paint. V'toyanei ba'avonim, and you're also allowed to pile stones around the tree. So let's consider it. Isn't that Dauke Hermuri? So b'shlema toyanei ba'avonim, I can understand putting stones around the tree has a practical benefit. You accomplish by that. You weakening that extra power, that extra strength that the tree has. Obviously, in other words, there's something about the tree that's making it, that this development of the stems or whatever is happening faster than it should. So therefore, by putting stones around it, you'll sort of block.
You're holding it in place so that it doesn't spread out and all your...
You're going to stand there while the fruit is ripening.
No, I'm saying pile a bunch of stones so that...
No, I don't think it's that. The point is, you pile stones around it, so therefore, like, the tree has to work harder to grow. It's like it has to put more energy into growing, and therefore it has less energy to use on its stems or whatever. El sokra b'sikra, amai, but what are you accomplishing with the red paint? So why is that not considered darkei ha'amori? It doesn't seem to have any logical basis. The answer is, you're right, it's not as far as healing the tree, but rather, hold on. Listen, the reason why you're allowed to paint it with red paint, it's not darkei ha'amori, because you're doing it in order that it should be a simon, that people should see, and once they see a tree painted like that, people will pass by, they will see, and they can daven for the owner of the tree that the tree should be able to, that the tree should do what it's supposed to be.
You could argue that's the reason behind all
the
argument of the
Derek. No, Dauke and Murray in general are not meant to. No, one second. Dauke HaModi, again, is you're doing something superstitious where there's no particular cause and no particular benefit for it. Here, for example, in our Mishnah, you take the amniotic sac and you bury it at a crossroads or hang it on a tree. That's not going to cause people to that's not meant to alert people that they should daven that this animal shouldn't miscarry in the future. But painting the tree itself red, that yes, because it's on the tree itself. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, as the Pasuk says about a Mitzvah, a Tomei Tomei Yikra, the Pasuk says you should call out Tomei Tomei, meaning Sarech Lahidiel, besides the simple meaning that it means you have to call out his Tomei so people know to stay away from him, it also means Sarech Lahidiel Rabim, you have to inform the public that he's Tomei, the Rabim of Achim, all of Rachim, and that way the Rabim will daven. And the same thing, anybody else who has any kind of disaster happen to him, you have to inform the public, and the rabbim should daven for him. So therefore, that's the same point as painting the tree red. So it's not Dauke HaMori, because you're doing it in order to alert people that they should daven. Amar Ravina, command to linen kubsa bedikla. Which opinion do we follow when we nowadays do something similar? When we have a date palm that has the same kind of problem, that the fruit is falling off before it's ripe, and what we do is we take a kubsa, we take a cluster of dates and hang them on such a tree. So what would that be? Come on, kihai tana. That goes like the tana of the spraisa. For the same reason, when people see a cluster of dates hanging over there on the tree in a place where it doesn't usually grow, they'll realize the same thing. That's meant to alert the public, this tree is unhealthy. Please daven for me that the tree should have its full health again. So that's a lot of it. Hadron alach behemam akshon. This next perek is the Torah tells us the Parshas Emor, the pasuk goes v'shur oiseh oiseh ves v'noi lois pishchatu b'yemechad. We have it at the beginning of the Yom Tov Kriya. Which means cattle, or seh, which is a general term for sheep and goats. It and its son, you're not allowed to shecht on one day. So our parak is going to deal with all the ins and outs of that. One day we're going to see at the end of the parak exactly how we define a day for that purpose. But yeah. Well, yeah, it means all on one day. But we'll see. We'll see when, for that purpose, when does the day begin? When does it end? But also, we have a lot of details to discuss.
24 hours
for a patient. Okay. So we have to figure out that. We have to figure out, does it apply only if one person is shechting them both or two people? So those are all that are going to be the subject of our parak. Is going to be all the ins and outs of this din. We're going to discuss a lot of points. Does it apply only to domestic animals? Does it apply to wild animals? Does it apply to hybrids, et cetera, et cetera? We're going to have a lot of discussion about it. Reasons behind the mitzvah, you have many of the Rishonim give an idea basically that it boils down to Rachmanus, that it shows a certain cruelty to kill both a mother and the baby animal on the same day, and therefore the Torah wants to have us avoid that. Sefer Achinuch also gives another idea behind it, that it represents, we should remember that Hashem looks after each species, that it shouldn't go extinct unless Hashem decides that it's time for it to, and therefore by not shechting a mother and a baby at the same time, it represents that we recognize that idea, that Hashem is looking after the species as a whole. Reb Shamshon of Kol Hirsch has yet another symbolic explanation of it, that the care of a mother for a child, even among animals, is a certain altruism is like more of a human trait that you find even among animals, because other than that, animals usually basically just look out for themselves. So that an animal looks
at their children also.
That's the point. So that the fact that a mother animal cares for her young is almost like a human trait that we see reflected in animals, and therefore
it's extremely communal, isn't it? A lot of species of bees, they don't even eat them.
Okay, but bees, fine, but we don't eat bees. We're talking about kosher animals.
Yeah.
So therefore the turtle wants us. When you bring a carbon or when you're shechting meat for yourself to eat, you need to recognize that point. You need to recognize and then respect that humanity, so to speak, that's in the animal. I don't know, but we don't eat ants either. So let's go. Okay, Mishnah starts up. Oisav Espinoi Noyag Ben Ba'oras Ben Ba'chutzlaris. This din of Oisav Espinoi applies both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutzlaris. Now, there's not much of a chiddush in that. The usual rule is that the only mitzvahs that apply only in Eretz Yisrael are mitzvahs atulias ba'aretz, only mitzvahs that are connected with the soil of Eretz Yisrael. Oisav Espinoi obviously is not. So there's not really much of a chiddush in that. However, these first couple of lines of the Mishnah are, we're going to have them repeated. We're going to have these things. Noyag ben ba'aretz ben mechutzlaretz b'fnei abayis v'shalei b'fnei abayis v'cholim v'mokdashin. We're going to have them repeated in many places at the beginning of a number of prakim in our Masechta. This perek, the next one where we talk about kisui adam, the one next one after that where we talk about gidan noshe, later on we talk about reishis hageiz and so forth. So therefore, it uses the same expression each time, even though not in every case is there a chiddush in all three cases. In each case, there's going to be a chiddush in one or more of the things that said, and therefore it mentions them all together to keep it parallel. Okay, b'fnei abayis v'shaloi b'fnei abayis, it applies whether the Beis Mikdash is standing or not. B'chulin u'v'mokdashin, and it applies whether the animals that you're shechting are chulin or whether they're kodshin. Which we'll see in the Gemara, that part is really the chiddush of this part, is that you would think maybe it only applies to chulin or maybe it only applies to kodshin. So we'll see in the Gemara how we know that not, and therefore that's why the Mishnah had to tell us. Okay, then, so what does this mean? Let's go through a lot of possibilities. First of all, hashoychet oisav espinoi chulin b'chut, if a person shechts a mother animal and the baby, and they're both chulin, and they're both shechted outside the Beis Mikdash, outside the Azara, fine, shneim ksherim, they're both kosher, you are allowed to eat both of them. Vasheni sofik as arboim, however, whoever did the second shechita, whether the baby was shechted first and then the mother, or vice versa, whichever one shechts the second one, is going to be sofik as arboim. He's going to get malchus. Sofik as arboim literally means he's going to absorb 40, meaning he's going to absorb 40 malchus. What
obviously he knew about.
Well, obviously we mean if there was Hatzorah, obviously. Yeah, we're talking about Mazed Hatzorah, the whole nine yards. Yeah, of course.
The shirk is spoig,
which means a sponge.
Sponge? Oh.
Yeah, so like he has to absorb, like as if he's a sponge that's absorbing things. Yeah.
Refer to materials, or is that like
the word spoig means a sponge.
Is it an adjective or
therefore sofig over here is an adjective. Yeah. It's a verb over here. He absorbs.
The root of it is a noun. Okay.
Okay. Okay. I mean, the oruch is another explanation that it may also be related to the word so fake, which means to clap, like by yisfek as kapha, that it says by Bolak at the end of Parashas Bolak, by yisfek as kapha, he clapped his hands in upset, in anger over that Bilam hadn't cursed the Jewish people. So it could be like so fake as aboyim, he's clapped, he's banged up with 40 miles. Whatever the point is.
Oh,
yeah. with 40 mouths. It's all right. The point is, now what's the point of saying both animals are kosher? Rashi says there's not really a chiddush in that. The reason why we're mentioning it is because in later cases in the Mishnah we're going to discuss where one or the other of them is also to eat. Tosfos says there is actually a chiddush in it. You would think that given that you committed an issur by shechting the second one, because the Torah tells us that you're not allowed to shecht them on the same day, maybe the second one should actually be osur, and therefore the Mishnah wants to tell us that no. Why taka? Is it not osur? Achronim talk about the idea, because it's not the shechita in and of itself, it's not possible, it's just you're doing it at the wrong time, basically.
It's not a gavra.
No. It's not so much gavra, well, sort of. It's not so much gavra and chesta. It's more, it's a time-bound thing. During that period, during that day.
On the day.
Yeah,
but on the animal.
No, not, I don't know what you'd say. No, because it applies to either person who does it. Because it applies even if one person shechts at one.
Not sort of that.
Okay, whatever. The point is the shechita in and of itself is not possible.
Yes.
Okay, whatever. Fine, call it gavra and chesta if you want. I don't know that it necessarily is, but whatever. Mind you, the Bahag says, and Rishonim bring from the Bahag, that maybe we should say the person who shechted the second one should be also to eat it. I'll derech like somebody does a malacha on Shabbos. So there is such an opinion. There is such an opinion, but it's brought to the Chumrah in halacha. Okay, onward. That was case number one. Number two, kodshim b'chutz. What about if both animals were kodshim and you shechted them outside the Azara? Then harishin chayav kares, the one who shechted the first one, is going to be chayav kares because he shechted a korban outside the Beit Mikdash. The second one will not be chayav kares because once you shechted the first one, the second one is not allowed to be shechted in the Azara because Arisa Vez B'nai. So therefore, in other words, at this point, once you shechted the first one of the pair, the second one for the rest of that day is possible to bring as a korban. Therefore, somebody shechted
the
out. Okay, we're going to say at the end of the paragraph that the day for this purpose means that it runs from nightfall, from shkia, whatever, of one day until shkia of the next day.
So
in other words,
So
if you shechted the one animal out, so if a person shechted one of these two, the mother and the baby, outside the azara in the morning, then later on in the day, somebody else, shechts the second one outside the azara. The one who shechted the first one is chayav kares because shchut echot. The one who shechted the second one is not chayav kares for shchut echot because it was possible at that point to be brought as a korban. What is a person chayav kares for shchut echot? Only an animal that could have been brought as a korban. This one, for the rest of that day, until shkia of that day, cannot be brought as a korban. The second day, if he shechted the second day, there's no issue at all.
Right.
So if he shechted outside, then sure, he's chayav kares. We're not talking about it. We're talking about on the one day. On the one day. Okay, if he checks on the second day, we're not talking about that. We're dealing here with Oysa Ves B'nai. So remember, we're talking about one day.
Well, what if he didn't know that? What if it's
if he didn't know, if he didn't know, then he obviously doesn't get Kares. But we'll talk about later in the parish when you have to inform him, when not, we'll get into that.
Right. And then also, you can do Shechita all 24 hours a day? There's no
In principle, as long as you have enough lights. No, you Shechita of Kodshim, you can't, but Shechita of Kulin, you can't.
Okay,
onward. Yeah. Fine, so if both of them are Kodshim, Bachot, the first one is chayav kares because he did shchut echutz. The second one is not chayav kares because at that point the second animal is possible to be brought as a korban for the rest of that day. Ushneim psulin, both of them are going to be possible to eat because they're both kodshim that were shechted outside the azara, which are also to eat. Ushneim sofkim nesarboyim, both people are going to be getting malchus, the one for shchut echutz and the other one for oisav esbenai. Third case, cholin b'fnim. What happens if both animals are cholin and you shechted them in the azara? Shneim stolen. Both of them are going to be possible because cholin that was shechted in the azara are also to eat. So both of them are possible, but only b'hasheni sofer gezharboim. Only the second one is going to get malchus for shchut echot. Not shchut echot. For itzavas b'nai. The first one is not getting malchus because it's true you're not allowed to shecht cholin b'azara, but we learn that from an esef. The pasuk tells us that the pasuk tells us that you have a pasuk that says if you're far away from the Beis Mikdash, then you're allowed to shecht animals for food, implying if you're in the Beis Mikdash, you're not allowed to. You can only shecht them for karbonis. But that is a classic case of lav habam mikval eser. That is the Torah is telling us an eser, shecht animals for food outside the Beis Mikdash. From that, we're deducing, but don't shecht, it's implied, but it's not, therefore a person doesn't get malchus for such a thing. So only the second one is going to get malchus because he shechted oisav esbenai. Okay, so that was case number three, where they're both cholin b'fnim, so they're both possible, but only the second one gets malchus. fourth case, kodshim b'fnim, if both animals are kodshim and they were shechted in the azara, harishin kosher upotter, the first one is perfectly kosher, it's a perfectly good carbon, and the person who did it is potter, and obviously that doesn't need to be said, we're just mentioning potter because we mentioned chayiv in the other cases. Vasheni, sofa, gitaboyim, apostle, the second one is going to get malchus for oisav esnoi, and the second one is going to be apostle because, again, since it's apostle as a korban, because it can't be brought as a korban that day because of oisav esnoi. Once you shechted the mother, the baby is automatically apostle as a korban for the rest of that day, and vice versa. It's called mechusar zman. The same way as you're not allowed to shecht as a korban an animal that is less than 7 days old, or the same, that's another example of mechusar zman. So the same thing when you shechted the mother, now the baby is mechusar zman for the rest of that day, and vice versa.
So the actual meat is allowed to be eaten by someone?
No, that's the point. It's possible kodshim. It'll have to be burnt. Okay. Now let's talk about...
Apostle kodshim have to be burnt in general.
Okay. Fine. So far those are four cases where both animals have the same status, both of them are cholin and both of them are kodshim, and they were both shechted in the same place, inside or outside the Beis Mikdash, as the case may be. Now let's have another set of cases where the status of the two animals is different. Cholin v'kodshim, where the status of the animals is different, but they were both shechted in the same place. Cholin v'kodshim b'chol, it's case number five. If one animal is cholin and the second one is kodshim, and both of them were shechted outside the azara, harishin kosher or potter, so fine, the first one is kosher to eat, and the person is potter, he didn't do anything wrong. He's allowed to shechted, you're allowed to shecht cholin outside the azara. There's no oisav esbino yet, because the second one wasn't shechted. Vasheni, sofer, gatavoyim, or potter, the second one is going to, the second one is going to get malchus for oisav esbenoi, and it's possible. He's not going to get kores, because again, once the cholin one was shechted, then the other one, the kodshim, is possible as kodshim for the rest of that day. So therefore, it's not roi lover, it's not something that could be brought as a korban, therefore he's not getting kores for shchut echot, but he's getting malchus for oisav esbenoi. Next, kodshim b'cholin, b'chutz. What about if it's the other way around? The first one that was shechted was kodshim, the second one is cholin, and they're both shechted outside the azara. Harishin chayev kares. The first one who shechted is going to be chayev kares, shchut echutz, upasol, and the animal is going to be posol because it's kodshim that was shechted outside the azara. Vasheni kosher. The second one is going to be kosher to eat because it was cholin. However, ushneim seifkin es haboyim, but they're both getting malchus. The first one for shchut echutz, the second one for oisav esbenoi.
Why is it kosher for
the second one? Because we said before, we said at the beginning of the Mishnah, that just because you shechted oisav esbenoi doesn't make it also to eat. Yeah. The person gets malchus for doing oisav esbenoi, but the meat itself is kosher to eat. Yeah.
That's
a Mishnah Mishnah. I lost on Mishnah. This is all dinim that we're going to learn in the Gemara, how we know this. Most of this, we just know from basic principles. We know once you have the basic principles in hand. We know a person gets malchus for oisav esbenoi. We know a person gets kares for shchut echutz. We know that cholin shenishchetu ba'azara apostle. And we know that once one animal of the pair is shechted, then the other one is possible for kodshim for the rest of that day. Once you know those basic facts, then all of the cases in our Mishnah follow immediately from those. Okay. Onward. Next case, kodshim b'chol. Okay, so cholin v'kodshim b'fnim. What about if, now let's talk about, so one is cholin, the other one is kodshim, and they're both shechted b'fnim in the azara. Shneim tzolin, both of them are going to be posel. The first one because it's cholin in the azara. The second one because mechot is man, because you can't shecht it once the first one was shechted. Vasheni sofik et haboyim. Only the second one is going to get malchus because the first one, okay, he shechted cholin b'azara, which you're not allowed to do. But again, that's only an esser. Is over on an Esther, not a Lois Esther, therefore no Malchus. The second one, who shechted the second one, is going to get Malchus for Oisav Esbenoi. Kodshim b'cholin b'fnim, what about the other way around? If first the Kodshim one was shechted, then the cholin one, both inside the Azara. Harishin kosher potter, good. The first one is a perfectly proper korban, therefore he's good. The korban is kosher, and he himself is potter, obviously. Vasheni, sofik is haboyim apostle, the second one is going to get Malchus for Oisav Esbenoi, and the animal itself is potter because it's cholin that was shechted in the Azara. Next case. So those are the second set of cases where the two animals have different statuses, but they were shechted in the same place, with nim or bachutz as the case may be. So again, the first four cases of our Mishnah, the two animals had the same status and they were shechted in the same place, with nim or bachutz. The second group of four cases, you had animals of different statuses but the same place. Now we're going to talk about the other way around, where you have different statuses and different places, right? They're going to have the same status, but different places. Again, first one was the same status, same place. Second one is different status, the same place. Third group is going to be different. Is going to be same status, but different places. So both of them are colon. First was same status, same place. Both colon outside, let's say. Different status, same place. Now it's going to be
same place, different status.
Right. Same status, different place. That's going to be the third group. Cholin b'chotzebufnim. If you had both animals were cholin, but the first one was shechted outside the azara, the second one was shechted in the azara. Harishin kosher or potter. Fine. The first one is kosher and potter because it's a perfectly normal shechita. Vasheni sofik is alboim apostle. The second one is getting malchus, not for cholin b'azara because that's not askei of malchus, but for oisav eskinoi or apostle on the animals. Apostle because it's cholin that was shechted in the azara, which are also b'hanu. Kodshim b'chotzer b'fnim. What about if both of them are kodshim and the first one was shechted outside the azara and the second one inside? Harishin chayev kares. The first one is going to be chayev kares because he shechted kodshim outside the azara. Ushneim soifkim es aboyim. Both of them are getting malchus. The first one for shchotichot. The second one for oisav eskinoi. Ushneim. So actually, Tosfos later on talks about the Tosfos on Dafei that really belong to our Mishnah, where Tosfos says you have actually an opinion. You have actually an opinion in Makkos that says that if a person is chayev kares and they get malchus, then they're potter from kares. So the malchus takes away the kares. So Tosfos says apparently our Mishnah is not like Rav Yitzchak. You have, I think, other acharonim, I think, will say, no, what we mean is, in other words, he's chayev kares if there was no Eden Basra, and he's malchus if there was Eden Basra, in other words, depending on the circumstances.
Some of the lost, we learned that you have two different punishments. You get the worst one, but the
come lebe derabim. Now you're talking about good, but that applies only to Misa and Momon, and according to the Mechoni Ben Akana, Kores and Momon. Here we're not talking about Momon. There's no money involved over here. He was Kores and or Malchus is the case, maybe. Okay, fine.
Why the Mishnah have to give us all the cases?
Because the point is that you might be able to deduce a lot of them, but like this, the Mishnah spells it out for us so that we understand. For example, we might not realize in some of these cases, why is he getting Malchus? We might not realize that he's getting Malchus because of Oisav Eskinoi, let's say, for example. We might not realize he's getting Malchus because of Chot Nechot or whatever. Okay, actually, Tosfos points out, that same Tosfos points out, the Gemara could have even mentioned four other possible cases. The Gemara could have done where the could have done a bunch of cases where there were two statuses in two places. But we don't need that already because once we have the 12 cases of our Mishnah, we can already deduce those. There's no Kiddush in them.
Okay.
Yeah,
first
not there. Yeah, they have to have Edom as well. Yeah,
so he has to know.
Yeah, they have to know what he's doing. There have to be Edom, yes. Okay, so let's go on. So if they're both kodshim and one was bachotz and the second one is b'fnim, harishin chayev kares, the first one's going to be chayev kares because shchut echot, or shneim sofkim et alboim, both of them are getting malchus, one for shchut echot, the other one for oisav eskinoi, or shneim sulin, both animals are going to be possible to eat, the one because it's kodshim that was shechted outside the azara, the other because it's cholin inside the azara. Cholin b'fnim v'chutz, if both of them are cholin and one was shechted in the azara and then the second one outside, harishin posel v'potter, the first one, the animal was posel to eat because cholin b'azara, but he's posel from anything because he was only over on an ester. V'asheni sofik is alboim v'kosher, the second one is getting malchus because oisav eskinoi, but the animal itself is kosher to eat because it's cholin. And the final case, kodshim b'fnim v'chutz, if both animals were kodshim and the first one was shechted in the azara and the second one outside, harishin kosher apotter, the first one is kosher, the animal itself is kosher to eat, is a kosher korban, and the person is potter from any punishment because he didn't do anything wrong. And v'asheni, so for kazaboyim apostle, the second one who shechted kodshim outside is going to be getting malchus, only malchus, not koris, by the way. He's getting malchus for oisav eskinoi. No koris, because again, the second one was posel for a korban the rest of that day until the next day comes. However, the animal itself is posel because kodshim that was shechted outside the azara.
When you have a kolum and being makrivit in the Now, this status cannot change or the behemoth make it become okay. If you second up, let it be kachim.
If you bring it to the Azara as cholin, you could, in principle, you could be makdish it in the Azara, although I'm not sure you're supposed to do that. But here we're talking about you never were makdish it. You brought it into the Azara and you shechted it, not ever.
Eat it at home.
Yeah, let's say you were planning to eat it at home or whatever. You weren't planning to bring it as a korban.
So so you can have change. Like, right, you know, when you check it, it becomes automatically static.
No, there's no automatically. No, if he has in mind, magic card chim, then it becomes card chim.
The
chorus situation. No. Chorus is card chim by chorus. Chol and Bazara, there's no chorus. All these over on is an asset.
So you get
Malkus for it? No, Malkus for an asset. Okay. The meat is going to be also Bahana, though.
Kachim
Bachot, yes. Kachim Bachot, it's Kolin Bazar now. Right, and Lava Bonn Kalat. Okay, so the Gemara starts out. Tanan Abonim, Minayin wa Oseves B'noi Shanoi B'mukdashin. First of all, how B'chlal do we know that this concept of Oseves B'noi applies to Kachim? Now, why shouldn't it apply to Kachim, Tosfos asks? So first, Tosfos starts by saying that maybe what we're talking about is...
Mukdashin
is Kachim. So maybe Tosfos says, let's say maybe the Gemara is hypothetically thinking. Imagine you have a case, a person has to bring their korban Pesach. They already shechted the mother of this animal earlier in the day. Now, if they can't shecht this one, they're not going to have any korban Pesach. Maybe the Gemara is wondering that in that case, the Esther bringing a korban Pesach should override the Lois Esther of Oseh Vesna. However, Tosfos says that's not the point of the question. The point of the question is, as the Gemara itself is going to tell us soon, that you have something in the pasuk that maybe implies that this, even though this pasuk is mentioned in a context of kodshim, you have something in the pasuk, which we're going to see in a second, that seems to imply that it's a new topic that doesn't have to do with kodshim. So therefore, you would think maybe it doesn't have to do with kodshim at all. Maybe it only applies to cholin. Hold on. Talmud Loimah, therefore, the Pasuk says, Shor a kesev a'ez ki yivoled. The Pasuk says, if an ox or a sheep or a goat is born, then it has to be with its mother for 7 days, and then only on the eighth day and onward can you bring it as a carbon. Uchtiv basre, then the next Pasuk continues, Vishor oiseh oisebes v'noi letishchatu b'yemechad. Then the next Pasuk continues that a shor or a seh, you're not allowed to shech it and its baby on one day. Therefore, by having them together, that means since you have the first pasuk is obviously talking about kachim, because saying you can only bring it as a korban after 7 days, then the second pasuk, which right away follows it, is also talking about kachim. Limit al osev espanoshin no ibn mukdashin. So that teaches us that it does apply to kachim as well. So now the question is, ve'ebam mukdashin ein b'cholin moy. Okay, maybe then fakir. Maybe it means it only applies to kachim. Maybe it doesn't apply to cholin.
Why would you say it applies to kachim next?
Because the first pasuk showed a kesef. It's talking about kachim. Therefore, the next pasuk.
Why do you know that?
Shor a kesev a'ez ki yivoled. If it's born, v'hoya shivas yamim tachas ima, it has to be with its mother for 7 days. U'miyom ha'shmini v'holo yeirotza l'korban isha l'Hashem. After the seventh day, I was mentioned. I didn't quote the pasuk, but I was saying that. Okay, but I said, that's what I said. The first pasuk says that when a baby animal is born, it has to be left with its mother for 7 days. You can only bring it as a korban after that. So therefore, the first pasuk is clearly talking about bringing korbanos. Therefore, the next pasuk is also talking about bringing korbanos.
Well, there's two things. It's the night, it's the same day, and then 7 days also.
No. Seven days is after the baby is born. The oseh v'esbenoi is whenever you shech the mother, then the whole rest of that day you can't shech the baby, and vice versa.
Right, but either way, you can't have the baby. You can't wait 7 days.
No. The point is, the baby could have been born 3 months ago, and now you decided to shech the mother. Now, okay. for the rest of that day, you can't shech that baby. Yeah, that's what oseh v'esbenoi is.
Okay.
So we see that it applies to Kodshim as well. Okay, well then the question is Ve'emam Mukdash and Ein B'cholin Loi. Okay, well maybe the other way around then. Maybe it only applies to Kodshim, not to Cholin at all. The answer is okay, but sure Hiftik Inyan. Okay, but on the other hand, if it was meant as a direct continuation, then the second Pasuk did not have to begin with Vishur Oiseh. Because if the previous Pasuk is already telling us Shur Oiseh Ve'ez, which covers all the domestic animals, then all the next Pasuk had to continue is Va'oseh Ve'esnoi, don't shecht on one day. And we would understand that it's a direct continuation. The fact that it starts out, that it applies only to Kodshim, the fact that it starts out, again, Shur Oiseh, means that it's a new topic. So therefore, it means that it applies to Cholin as well. Well, then we're back to Ve'em V'cholin Ein V'mukdashin Loi. Well, then maybe after all, it applies only to Cholin, not to Kodshim. Because the shur oiseh is a new topic. The answer is vishur, sure, but on the other hand, it says vishur, and therefore, vav moisif al inyan rishon. So it means the vav is coming to add to the previous thing. So therefore, in other words, we have, on the one hand, we have a vav, which ties this to the previous pasuk. On the other hand, we have the fact that it repeats shur oiseh, which we were already introduced to them in the previous pasuk. Therefore, by putting those two things together, we learn, on the one hand, it does apply to Kodshim because of the Vav. On the other hand, it also applies to Cholin because of the word Shor Oiseh. So that's it. Okay, so the question is, if we're comparing it, if we're saying that to a certain extent it's similar to Kodshim and it applies to Kodshim, then in that case we should argue like this, E, ma Kodshim kilayim loy. So we should argue then, when it comes to Kodshim, you cannot bring as a korban an animal which is kilayim, a crossbreed, for example, between a sheep and a goat, even though both sheep and goats are kosher animals, and they're both kosher for korbanos, but a crossbreed of a sheep and goat is possible for a korban. So by that logic, it's kosher, yeah. By that logic, you should say, af oisev espinoi kilayim lo. You should say about the same thing. If you're learning from the Vav, that there's a connection between oisev espinoi and kachim. So you should say that it doesn't apply to kilayim. Alama tanya, in that case, why do we learn in a braisa, oisev espinoi no kilayim or bakoi? We learn in a braisa that oisev espinoi does apply to crossbreeds. So if you have...
Hold on.
So therefore, so it does apply to kilayim. Unlike korbanos, so therefore in that sense it's not like korbanos, why are we learning from the Vav, and that it also applies to a koi. A koi is a creature which we're not sure if it's a chaya or a behemoth. Later on, the Gemara will discuss exactly what a koi is. But anyway, the point is, va'oid, and besides that also, sefsin. The fact is, the Torah uses the expression seh, and va'omar rava, and we know that rava says that the word seh, zeh bonav. So first of all, the question is, why should it apply? The first question is, if you're learning from Kodshim, then by logic it shouldn't apply to Kilayim. So why does it? Second of all, the question is, why anyway does it apply to Kilayim? The Torah mentions in that connection Seh, and Rava tells us, Zeh Bona'av, when you have one place in the Torah where it says Seh, you have from it a Binyan Av, namely where the Pasuk says, when it lists the kosher animals in Parashas A, it says, the following animals you can eat. Sure, sakes of him, the say is it. Now, there it mentions say individually in connection with sheep and with goats. Therefore, from that we learn that an animal is not called a seh unless it's a pure breed, unless it's all sheep or all goat. So therefore, from that alone, we know we have a binyan av, kol makom shenamar seh, that whenever any place else in the Torah where it says that you have to use a seh for something, einoi ela lahotzi es kilayim, the purpose of it is to exclude a kilayim. And the Gemara in Bava Kama explains, Tosfos brings it over here, what exactly the point of that binyan av is. The point is, when it comes to pidyon peter chamor, which we learned in the previous perek, but again, we're learning b'choras, bez Hashem, that you have a firstborn donkey, the Torah tells us you redeem it with a sheep. So it has to be a pure bread. It can't be a cross breed of a sheep and a goat.
Why can't you learn that for sure?
Because you don't have. I mean, how would you learn? Okay, sure, fine. But like this one, it says specifically, sakes of him. The say is him. It means the word say applies only when it's completely a kebet, so only when it's completely an ace. But we're learning from say because the Torah could have just said sakes of him the is. Sure, there's no other way it could say.
Binyan av are all in the Torah.
Yeah,
right?
There's no
independent discoveries of binyan av.
Okay, so the point is, we have two questions. Number one, if we're learning from Kodshim, if we're learning that Kodshim has a certain relationship to Oseh Espinoi, then it shouldn't apply to Kilayim. And anyway, why does it apply to Kilayim? If it mentions Seth, and Seth tells us not Kilayim. The answer is, Omakro oi l'rabas is a Kilayim. Fine, but on the other hand, the Pasuk says, Meshur oi. And the word oi comes to include kilayim. So there's the answer to both our questions. Why does it apply to kilayim, even though kilayim can't be used to a korban? Because of oi. Why don't we use the binyan av of seh to say that it only applies to pure breed animals? Because of oi. Because it says oi.
Why can't you say shur is only shur and seh?
Okay, listen. Because there's no other way to write the word shur. There's no other way to say shur. On the other hand, when it comes to sakes of him and say is him, it could have said sakes of him, but
isn't.
Sakes of him is one. Sakes of him means a young sheep, means a lamb from the sheep, whatever.
It's a breed.
The word seh means an animal. The word seh means an animal. We're going to be using it throughout the parish. Whatever it means the offspring. Whatever it means a sheep. Whatever. The point is that a seh is the point is since it mentions separately sakes of him and seh is him, that means from that we learn that the word seh means not an animal that's half sheep and half goat. So why does Oseh Espinoi apply to such a creature? Because of the word oi. So So the question is, hi, oi, mi boile lechalik. What do you mean? You can't use the word oi to teach us that it should apply to kolayim. You need the word oi to separate things. Because if you didn't have the word oi, how would the pasuk go? Like this, the pasuk goes, v'shur oi se, oi se ves b'noi lo tishchatu b'yemecha. If you didn't have the oi, if it said v'shur v'se, lo tishchatu, oi se ves b'noi lo tishchatu, you would think, well, yeah, so then you would think, what does it mean? When is a person chayev? Only if he shechs a shur and its baby, and a se and its baby.
Oh, two couples.
Both two pairs. Two sets, yeah. And therefore, we need the word oi to tell us it's either a shur and its baby or a san and its baby. So how can we use the word oi to teach us about kalayim? This was machalik mibnoina. The fact that it applies to only one species at a time, that you learn from the word that it says oi sebes bnoi. Bnoi means its child, meaning only one species. If it meant both of them, it would have said bnei. Okay, the problem is, but still, we need the word b'noi, we need the word oi, rather, for what it says in a different braisa, that says in a braisa. Ilu nema shur v'seh u'b'noi, if the pasuk had said, v'shur v'seh oiseh v'esh'noi, hoyisi oimer, then you would think, okay, You don't maybe need two separate pairs, a shur and its baby and a se and its baby, but you would need at least you would think, fine, but it has to be that you share two different species, a shur and a se, and then the baby of one of them. So you still need three animals altogether in order to be chayav. Talmud lema shur oy se oy se ves v'noi. No, therefore the pasuk says a shur or a se is and its baby. My lab may oi naskalai. So doesn't that mean we're learning from oi that it means one parent and one child rather than two parents and one child? The answer is oi. And in that case, if we're learning from oi, we don't have the word oi available to teach us anything about kalai. The answer is oi. No, that's not what the braisa means. May oisoi. Rather, the braisa is learning this from the word oisoi, which is also simple. Oisoi ve'es benoi. So therefore, what it means is that all a person has to shecht in order to be chayav is also one parent animal and one child animal. So not a shur plus a se and the baby of one of them, but rather just either a shur and its baby or a se and its baby. So therefore, so we still have the word oy available. The problem with that is honichal
rabban. Say that. No, and then you could apply to everything else.
Because that's not how the pasuk says it. The pasuk says it like this. And, okay, so the fact is, the way the pasuk says it, v'shur oise oise v'espinoi, we're not learning from the word oi, we're learning kalayim. From the word oise, we're learning it's only a shur and its baby, or a se and its baby. You don't need anything more than that. Okay, the problem with that is, honichal rabbanon demiyatur lehu oise. Okay, that works according to the Chachamim, who disagree with Hananya, which the Gemara will get to soon, where they say they have the word oise available, therefore they can use it for a drasha. But according to Hananya, so he holds that we're using the word oisai for another drasha, as the Gemara will talk about later on the Amud, which we'll get to tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. So according to him, Taka, where do you know that you only need a shur and its baby or a se and its baby and not both? If we're saying we're not learning that from oi, if we're saying we're learning that from oisai, because we need oi for kalayim, and according to Hananya, he's using oisai for another drasha. So according to him, maybe Taka, you need a shur and a se and a baby. The answer is lachalik like tzarich kra the savolak Rav Yonasan. The answer is that Hananya would say, I don't need a separate thing in the pasuk to divide it to say it's either one or the other, because he holds like Rav Yonasan, who holds. Let's finish up and explain what that is. The Tanya, as we learn in a brisa, the pasuk says ish asher yikalol as aviv es imo. The pasuk says if a person curses his mother v'es his father v'es his mother. Now v'es could mean and or it could mean or. So what does it mean? Does he have to curse both of them to be chayev? It could be one second. So from that pasuk, you would only know that he's chayev misa if he curses his father and his mother, both of them. Aviv shaloi imoy v'imoy shaloi aviv minayin. How do we know he's chayev even if he only curses one of them? Tamad lema aviv v'imoy kilo. Therefore, we have a different pasuk that mentions that he cursed his father and his mother. He cursed. Let's finish and let me explain. The first pasuk mentions asher yikalel es aviv. So the verb yikalel is next to aviv. in the second pasuk of the Imai Kilel. Therefore, the verb Kilel is next to Imai, his mother. From that we learn Aviv Kilel, Imai Kilel. Therefore, from that we learn whether he only curses his father, whether he only curses his mother. Either way, it's Chayiv Mitzvah. Divrei Rabbi Yoshi. Because the first pasuk mentions Yekalel es Aviv. So you have the word Aviv next to the word Yekalel. In the second pasuk, you have Aviv ve'imoi kilo. So you have the word imoi next to kilo. So therefore, that allows us to say that whether he's Mekalel only his father, whether he's Mekalel only his mother, either way, he's Chayiv Mitzvah. Because in one pasuk, because each one has the word kilo next to it, right? Divrei Rabbi Yoshi, that's what Rabbi Yoshi says. Rabbi Yonasan Oimi, Rabbi Yonasan says, you don't need that. Mashma shneim ke'echad or mashma echad b'tnei atmo. Whenever you have a vav in a pasuk, aviv ve'imoi could mean both of them. It could mean both of them. It could mean separately. Ad sheyifret l'char kosev yachdov, unless if you have a pasuk that mentions two things connected with a vav and says in connection with it, yachdov, together, then it definitely means both of them. So here, where it doesn't say yachdov, then automatically we know that aviv ve'imoi kilo means his father or his mother. I don't need a different pasuk to teach us that. Rabbi Yonasan would use the other pasuk for a different drasha. That if he curses them after they're dead, that he's chayiv misa. The point being, Hananya, who doesn't have the word oisai available in this pasuk, he will hold like Rabbi Yonasan that you don't need the word oi to tell us it's one or the other. You automatically know, even with a vav, it would mean one or the other. Therefore, he has the word oi available after
because,
all.
Because you don't have...
Because you need yachta to say it's both together. Yeah. Otherwise, it means one or the other. So therefore, Hananya holds like that, and therefore he has, he doesn't even need a lachalik in the pasuk. The very fact that the pasuk doesn't say yachdav automatically means either a shurinus baby or a stanus baby. He doesn't need the word oi for that. He can use the word oi for kalayim, and he can use the word oi for his drasha that will discuss them. The chachamim will hold like Rabbi Yeshi, that unless you have the word oi, it could conceivably mean you need both of them. Okay. To be continued tomorrow, Beis Hashem.